Together with the combined chiefs of staff, virtually the entire military and naval staffs of Great Britain and the United States participated in the discussions. They began on January 14th near Casablanca and ended last Sunday afternoon with a press conference for a group of war correspondents, among them CBS's Charles Cullingworth. The correspondents were flown secretly from Allied headquarters in North Africa. Later, we will give you Cullingworth's eyewitness report of the meeting, a meeting which President Roosevelt described as unprecedented in history. The president flew to North Africa. He was accompanied by General Marshall, Chief of Staff of the United States Army, Admiral Ernest J. King, Chief of Naval Operations, Lieutenant General Arnold, Chief of the Army Air Forces, and Harry Hopkins. Prime Minister Churchill was accompanied by the British Army, Naval, and Air Chiefs. In addition, American Generals Eisenhower, Clark, and Spatz came from French North Africa, and British commanders, Generals Alexander and Montgomery, and Air Chief Marshal Tedder came from Libya. There was hardly an expert who could aid in the discussions who was not there. General Somerville, commanding general of the United States Army's Services of Supply, was at hand, as was Averill Harriman, Lend-Lease Coordinator in England. Robert Murphy, United States Minister to North Africa, and Harold Macmillan, British Resident Minister for Allied Headquarters in North Africa, represented the diplomatic services, and undoubtedly they aided in the discussions with General de Gaulle and General Giraud. The President said that while he and Prime Minister Churchill were in almost constant conference, the British and American combined staffs discussed the principles and methods of pooling all the resources of the United Nations. At his press conference concluding the meetings, the president outlined the decisions which had been reached. All those participating in the discussions reaffirmed their determination to destroy the military power of the Axis and at the same time plotted the Allied military operations for 1943. All possible help will be sent to aid the Russian offensives, thereby cutting down German manpower as well as wearing out German material. And the United Nations will give all possible aid in the heroic struggle of China, now in its sixth year, and thereby end for all time the attempts of the Japs to dominate the Far East. The president also said that there was no intention on the part of the United Nations to harm the people of the Axis countries or of the Axis-dominated countries. However, he said the United Nations certainly would destroy the philosophy of hate and fear for the subjugation of other peoples. The president stressed that he and Churchill and their staffs had completed their work and that the general staffs had had a meeting of minds on all the military operations. He said he was confident that 1943 would be a much better year than 1942. Both the President and Prime Minister Churchill were entirely satisfied with the results of the conference. Churchill said there had never been a conference to equal the present one for comprehensiveness, and he added that the results of the conference would give the Allied troops their best chance at victory. He said that at that very moment, heavy actions impended. He pointed out that the British Eighth Army had followed Rommel 1,500 miles across Libya and added that it was like Mary and the Little Lamb. Everywhere that Rommel went, the Eighth Army was sure to go. The president also visited American troops in the field and motored 108 miles northward to Port Leoté and placed wreaths on both American and French graves there. One tragedy marred the otherwise perfect arrangements for the meeting. En route to the conference from Allied headquarters in North Africa, Edward Boudry, a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation correspondent, was killed by Spanish anti-aircraft fire when the plane went over Spanish Morocco. That, in brief, is the story of one of the most sensational news developments since Pearl Harbor. It's a story that affects directly or indirectly every nation in the world. Unable to bring you a direct report tonight from Columbia's correspondent, Charles Cullingworth, who attended the press conference held by the President and Prime Minister Churchill. But Cullingworth has cabled his report, and we are given a pretty good idea of what went on at that press conference. Says Cullingworth, the President and the Prime Minister met the newsman in the rear garden of a villa on the outskirts of Casablanca. The entire area for blocks was full of troops, anti-aircraft equipment, and barbed wire. The newsmen sat in the grass at the feet of the seated Roosevelt and Churchill. General de Gaulle and General Giraud were also seated. Soon the business of taking pictures began. The four men posed one way, then another, but not before the President and the Prime Minister had a little exchange about their hats. The President asked Churchill if he wanted to take his hat off. Churchill said no, he wore it to keep the sun out of his eyes, and he said the President should wear his. But Mr. Roosevelt replied that he was born without a hat, and he didn't see any reason for one now. While the cameramen were working, the president recognized one of them and joshed him. Finally, the president asked Generals de Gaulle and Giraud to pose for the photographers. He wanted them shaking hands. The leader of the fighting French and the chief of the French in North Africa went into the traditional stance, but it seemed some of the photographers weren't satisfied. They wanted another chance at the picture. Okay, boys, the president said, but this will have to be the last one. Soon, Mr. Roosevelt asked the newsmen to move up closer for the conference. All this time, there was plenty of activity in the whole area. Lieutenant Colonel Elliot Roosevelt, the president's son, helped with arrangements, as did Harry Hopkins' son, Robert, who was a corporal. Secret Service agents had the group surrounded. When some of the newsmen tried to filter back toward the president's chair, they were quickly shooed away. Meanwhile, the whole Casablanca area was alive, protecting, watching, making sure that everything went off according to plan. The entire area was impregnated with battery after battery of anti-aircraft guns. Off to the side of the garden, where the British and American leaders met newsmen, was a fancy tiled swimming pool. That is, it used to be a swimming pool. It had been converted into an air raid shelter. During their talk with the press and radio men, the president smoked cigarettes in his long holder. Churchill kept a cigar in his mouth, but it was no longer lighted when the conference broke up. Before the newsmen started to make arrangements to send this hottest story to their home radio networks and newspapers, the president was presented with a Morocco-bound portfolio. It contained the signatures of all persons who had talked and visited with him at his villa. Mr. Roosevelt seemed quite proud of it. He even remarked to his son, Elliot, that the Arabic signatures should have English meanings written in brackets. But the younger Roosevelt pointed out that at least one signature was marked just that way. Incidentally, the president said that that famous portfolio is going into his library at Hyde Park, so some 100,000 persons will have a look at it every year. The press conference was quite similar to others, except that no questions could be asked of Mr. Roosevelt or of Mr. Churchill. The two leaders got off their usual quota of good humor and good cracks. The president also took time during his important 10-day visit to inspect American troops in French Morocco. Our commander-in-chief rode in a jeep. Behind him came all the other big shots from America, and the soldiers who had to rehearse for the review felt quite certain it was just another bunch of brass hats. That is, until they saw the president. Then, says Collingwood, despite the fact they stood rigidly at attention, their eyes almost popped out when they saw Franklin Delano Roosevelt himself, not 6 feet away, with that big smile of his. This auto convoy was heavily guarded. Secret Service agents, Scotland Yard, our military police, Royal Marines, armored cars, fighter planes overhead all the time. Correspondents who made this trip said that the president joked with the generals accompanying him, as usual, and several times he spoke with soldiers. But most of the time he appeared dead serious. Once his hat blew off, but Lieutenant General Mark Clark caught it for him. Finally, the chief executive sat down at a field kitchen to eat what all our soldiers eat, a typical infantry field luncheon. After that dinner, there was some troop inspecting, then the convoy proceeded to Port Leoté, the scene of some of the hardest fighting in the North African campaign. The president's car had changed from a jeep to a limousine. It stopped in front of a neat cemetery where American boys are buried. He laid a wreath at the foot of the flagpole. Then the convoy returned to Casablanca, 108 miles away through a drizzling rain. Correspondents report that word of the president's passing early in the morning made the rounds very quickly, so that on the return trip, the roads were lined with American soldiers. And that is Charles Collingwood's cabled report of what went on at that press conference in Casablanca.